Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I like to talk about the evolution of consciousness and whatever that means to you, and how I feel we collectively as a planetary race are moving into a greater awareness of ourselves, our minds, our unconscious, our superconscious, our, let's call it the field of awareness, as some people have named it. So tonight's guest is very much a part of developing a new paradigm of understanding ourselves, and particularly because we spend so much time in the dream world, the sleeping, and he's written a book called Lucid Dreaming. My guest's name is Robert Wagoner, and the subtitle is Gateway to the Inner Self. Robert, welcome to the program.
Alan, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you know, lucid dreaming is a topic I've been fascinated with because I've had lucid dreams, and meaning how I define it, and you could refine that definition, is that you become aware that you are sleeping. You're dreaming, and then somewhere in the dream, you realize you're in the dream. And of course, that has great metaphors and throughout world literature, spiritual literature. But is that a fair definition, or do you have some refinement of that lucid dreaming definition?
For most lucid dreamers, we use when you realize in a dream that you're dreaming. But the American Psychological Association actually has a technical definition for a lucid dream, which is a dream in which the sleeper is aware that he or she is dreaming and may be able to influence the progress of the dream narrative.
And is that a big part of this research you've been doing, the fact that you can influence the progress of the narrative?
Right. I've been lucid dreaming since 1975, and since that time I've had more than 1,000 lucid dreams. And just seeing how you can influence lucid dreaming and what kind of information you can obtain, That's really been the focus of my personal investigation these last 20 years.
But let's get just defining the dream. Of course, everyone dreams. But do you feel that dreams are a manifestation of the psychological data, or do you feel that dreams maybe come from somewhere outside our conscious awareness? What do you feel?
You know, using a term from Carlos Castaneda, I feel like a lot of our dreams are just about our own bubble of perception, our own inner ideas, our inner concepts, our inner emotions, and we kind of work it out in the dream state. But in some cases, I think you see something else going on where a person either obtains future information in some cases or telepathic information, or a broader range of awareness in the dream state. So it's a broad field, and there's a lot of investigation to be done.
No, but just what your own opinion is, because I can say in my lucid dreaming, I feel like I've accessed worlds that were beyond my interior psychology. There were interactions with, let's say, even universes or altered states of reality that seem to be different than the world that we live in, but just as real in a sense in another level of awareness. Is that true of your altered states or lucid dreaming?
Well, my lucid dreaming spans a lot of work, and so one of my primary points, and the reason my book is called Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, is that I point out in my book there's a counterintuitive technique a person can use to, I believe, access their inner self and its awareness. Basically, when you become consciously aware in the dream, instead of interacting with the dream figures and the dream setting, you just ignore all of that and pose questions to the non-visible awareness behind the dream and see what the response is. So not only can a person interact with dream figures and kind of the contents of their subconscious mind, but I think they can also interact with other layers of awareness and even, as you say, other dimensions of actuality.
Oh, so you're saying when you become lucid, when you become aware in your dream, don't dwell on the elements and start to control them, but go to the source that's generating the awareness, and as if it's the source itself in a way, and start to ask questions of the source. Is that what you're referring to?
Right. I feel that the most powerful information and also the most creative element in the lucid dream is this non-visible awareness behind the dream. So for example, a person could become consciously aware in the dream and just shout out to the dream, "Hey dream, show me something important for me to see." And then suddenly the entire lucid dream will change and they'll be brought into some action, some information that's really important for them to see at that time. Or they can ask to experience a concept or have a spiritual experience. It's basically unlimited when you start to realize this technique of interacting with the awareness behind the dream.
So would you say that awareness behind the dream is non-local? Is it an aspect of our individuated consciousness, or is that an aspect of the totality of what consciousness is?
Well, I think it represents what Carl Jung called our self with a capital S, basically our larger self. And from my investigation and my interaction with this awareness behind the dream, this inner self, it seems to have a broader perspective that falls outside of time and space. It seems to exist at a level of awareness where non-local information is accessible and where information outside of time is also accessible.
But is that, of course it's common to everybody, that space, but is it coming from our own generated psyche, or is it something that seems to be outside of us, outside of our brain mind field?
Right. You know, I remember in one of the books, The Art of Dreaming, Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan had this same sort of conversation. In that book, Don Juan calls this awareness behind the dream, he calls it the dreaming emissary. But he told Carlos that any lucid dreamer or any shaman ought to have access to that level of awareness if they're very good at being a shaman, and they ought to be able to access that even in meditative states. But so to answer your question, I don't think it's outside of one's psyche. I think it represents the larger awareness of the psyche, which most of us are just simply out of touch with.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. And it's mostly, in a sense, that is who we are, that awareness itself. I mean, that is, you know, and you saying you were getting into Advaita, Vedanta, sort of non-dual understanding of what consciousness is. And people say that is who we are. Everything else is the illusion of the personality. And that's where your work is going, you told me. Is that true?
Right. In some regards, this awareness behind the dream is what you might call the durable self. It's deeper than the ego. It's deeper than the waking self. And it seems to be the part of the self that endures outside of space and time.
But you also said that in this awareness, as you gain the awareness of the awareness, you've then had some transformative experiences or some awakening type experiences. Can you talk about that? What happens?
Right. Yeah. So what happened to me, Alan, after 20 years of lucid dreaming, I began to realize that a dream was a co-creation of my conscious and unconscious mind, that a lucid dream was a co-creation of my conscious and unconscious mind. And also I began to realize that my experience of waking reality was largely a creation of my conscious and unconscious mind. And so I decided that I wanted to go deeper, and I wanted to find the source of this reality. I mean, where does this all spring from? But I knew I had to kind of let go of my own ideas, my own mentations, my beliefs and emotions, and I had to let that go. And so at that time, when I got to this point, I was struggling with this, and I'd go to sleep, and all night long, it would be nothing but blue light. I mean, the entire night, just blue light. And at first, I was perplexed when I'd wake up in the morning. I didn't know what to put in my dream journal, you know, just scribble down blue light, because there is no me, there is no action, there is no symbols, there is no nothing but blue light. And so this kept going on and on, and it got to a point where one morning when I came down for breakfast, my wife asked me what was going on. And she told me that night she woke up and she looked at my face, and she told me that I looked like I was in utter bliss. She said she'd never seen a face look like that before. And so that's how it all started, and that's how I started going deeper by using lucid dreaming to kind of go to the source of reality.
Wait, so you're saying that's how it all started, it being what? Can you go further into talking about what you're...
Yeah, it was interesting. So after these initial blue light experiences, I had a very curious experience, and you have to realize that I'm a person who at that time had never studied any Buddhism or really any Eastern religion, just because of the complexity of it. Instead, I was a deeply reading the works of Jane Roberts, the Seth material.
I love that stuff, the nature of personal reality
and the individual and the nature of mass events. And these books by Jane Roberts, if you get into them deeply, it is a very sophisticated philosophical and psychological and spiritual examination of experience.
Absolutely.
So what happened after these initial blue light experiences, I was having this curious lucid dream where these two beings were helping me manipulate through this space. And finally, we got to a sanctuary, a white sanctuary, where I attained full lucidity. And I walked into this sanctuary, and then suddenly I came upon a being composed of blue light. So imagine you're walking through a white sanctuary and come up to a being composed of blue light. I don't mean blue skin, I mean blue light. And so this being was about 16 feet tall. It had a little kind of white robe wrapped around itself and a little trident in its left arm, kind of hooked in its left arm. And so I started laughing because I was lucidly aware. I knew I was dreaming, but at the same time, I had never seen anything so incredible, kind of a blue light god or a blue light monster. And so wondering how to respond, I kind of pulled one from Carlos Castaneda. Whenever he was encountering something at some gate of awareness, he would always try to get beyond it. And so I just started running. And right as I ran up to it to get beside it on its side, it's like my entire being exploded, like all the cells in my body had been altered, but just by running and trying to get past this thing. And so later I read about the Buddhist idea of dakinis, of kind of non-physical spiritual entities who assist people in what Buddhists call dream yoga. And dream yoga is the practice of lucid dreaming in the spiritual context of Buddhism. But the final thing that happened, though, is one night after this experience, I was going to sleep, still interested in going beyond to the source, and I was having a little inner conversation with my inner self, which basically told me that I had to realize that if I truly wanted to go to the source, I might cease to be. And it truly meant that I might no longer exist in physical reality. But I responded to it that I just had to know. I had to know the source of all of this. Otherwise, it would just be some sort of divine comedy that I was involved in. I had to get to the source of reality. And that night, it's hard to talk about a non-dual experience, but basically, imagine being pure awareness within pure awareness. And And that's what this experience was. And then all of a sudden, I popped out of the experience, and there was a being standing there in a robe, and I said, was that a lucid dream? And the being there said, no, to enter a lucid dream, go here. And I stepped into that space and was hurtling through a tunnel of light, and then later popped into a lucid dream, completely lucid. So that's the weird trip I went on after 20-some years of lucid dreaming.
Oh, okay, no, that brings up a lot of points, and I'm really happy you shared such a personal experience. First, when you exploded into these light beings, I mean, I believe these are realities, real. I don't think they're psychological manifestations. I think we've been trapped by a psychological paradigm that has kept our consciousness very limited, and I think, yes, there is psychology and there are psychological reasons, but I think the human sphere of awareness is much greater than what's been defined and confined by the Freudian psychological mode that has dominated the Western thinking of the last 100 years. I mean, would you agree with that? I mean,
right. I think we have, in effect, been to some degree deluded by the path we've been on. You know, I like science. I enjoy the scientific method and all, but I think we have to move further beyond it to understand the actual nature of experience and the actual nature of reality.
Right, and so it has its place. There is psychology. There's a need for psychiatrists, psychologists, and, you know, it's like everything. The freedom that it gained us in the 20th century also limits us as we now become aware and go beyond that paradigm. So I'm saying to you, yes, I believe what you experienced are realities and phenomena and actualities that are beyond what we know to be true, let's say. But I feel whatever happened so is real. So when you explode into all those pieces, were you shifted fundamentally at first? What was the effect, the lasting effect of that explosion initially?
Well, as I went deeper, a person ends up just looking at all of reality differently. In the books by Castaneda, there was Carlos Castaneda's teacher, Don Juan, talked about the idea of controlled folly, that at a certain level of depth in the shamanic path, one begins to see all of this as a kind of Maya, which some people translate as illusion, but if you look at the actual Sanskrit definition of Maya, like some Sanskrit scholars at the University of Chicago have done, they talk about Maya being more like creative transformation. And that's kind of what a dream is like. A dream is a creative transformation of conscious and unconscious material being projected out there. So that was the fundamental change. I began to look at reality in a totally different way. Now here's the funny thing, Alan. It wasn't until 3 years after this experience, I was at an event, a conference by the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and they had a Tibetan Buddhist Bond Lama, Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, there, who was speaking about his new book at the time, The Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep. And he said that the ultimate goal of dream yoga was a non-dual experience of the clear light, or basically a non-dual recognition of pure awareness by awareness itself. And when I heard this guy say that, it was the first time anyone had given me any insight into my experience. I'd never read Buddhism. I didn't really have any interest in that sort of thing. And I realized that in a strange way, I'd kind of bushwhacked my way there just through reading the works of Jane Roberts and doing my own investigation into the nature of consciousness in the lucid dream state.
Well, that's understandable because that's how they got there. I mean, come on, all traditions were created because someone had an experience. They defined the experience, they confined it, they dogmatized it, and it's also been a path for others. But someone comes across these phenomena, and I think human consciousness, in a way, hasn't really changed since the dawn of creation or whatever it is. And we have the same facilities all the great masters have. So, yeah, that's totally understandable. It's just that they've kept their awareness and tradition alive to those possibilities, and we haven't. So, but
Right,
the, yeah.
and I felt happy that I kind of stumbled into it because I know in lucid dreaming you see how vital expectation and belief is, and so I was so glad that I stumbled into something that I did not expect. I wasn't trying to get to a non-dual state. I was just trying to understand the nature of reality, and that's when I stumbled into this and then I was surprised a few years later to hear that Buddhist in this tradition of dream yoga had basically discovered the same thing.
Right, and I think because you had the experience, of course, you'd be able to recognize it. For people who haven't had the experience, it's a sort of dogma, or it's a sort of teaching that what if? And I think the purpose of these traditions is to teach experience. And so, yeah, you are developing your own, in a way, sense of tradition, your own way of getting there, which is really, anyone who investigates consciousness will do that. They'll find their own way home in a way, in a sense, and it will line up with different traditions, Toltec, Taoist, Sufi, Buddhist. There's many paths home, and there are many masters who've reached the awareness of awareness, as you called it. So, yeah, it makes sense to me that that happened. But I do want to ask you about this awareness of awareness. So you've reached that, but were you able to bring that back into this reality? Or what happens when you wake up from a lucid dream? What happens to this? Does this sense of time, space start to crumble in a way? Or
Well,
what's
no, I wouldn't say so. I'd say after that final profound state of non-dual awareness, once I came out of that, I realized that we exist in an interconnected oneness, that all of us exist in an interconnected oneness. Science has shown us that matter and energy are essentially one. That even though I'm sitting on a chair, on another level, I know that it's just a pattern of energy. It's a form of energy that I'm utilizing. But I think what we're going to get to, and I think physics is kind of helping us get there, is that matter and energy and consciousness are one. And when we come to that realization, we'll realize what I believe is definitely the case, that we exist in an interconnected oneness, that everything is conscious and alive, even space is conscious and alive. So I think that's where we're heading, as you mentioned, as we kind of have this evolution of consciousness. And that's what I'm trying to help people in my book understand, is that you can use lucid dreaming to grow concepts, to grow your understanding, and you don't have to take it from me. You can do your own experiments and see for yourself.
well, maybe in a little while we can talk about how to develop a lucid dreaming practice, but I just want to continue with this understanding of everything being matter and energy and consciousness, because what seems to be, and this is of course my cultural training, is that there's a world outside of us, and then there's consciousness or the dream or the lucid state, which seems to exist inside my field of consciousness, but how is that related to what's outside of me? I mean, the lucid dream is sort of inside of me and also maybe interactive or co-creative, but more inside of me. And when I open my eyes or listen, I sense a world outside of me. And of course, that's been called Maya or illusion, but it seems to be real. So,
right. You know, So here's what lucid dreamers discover. In the lucid dreaming state, you realize how mentally dynamic that state is. And you realize how the experiencer is actually embedded in the experience. So here's some examples. One time I became consciously aware in a dream. I knew I was dreaming, so I flew out of this auditorium to go exploring around this college campus. And then at the end, I decided to go back at the beginning of the lucid dream and go back to that auditorium. But this time, as I was lucidly flying up to the wall, this time, for some reason, it seemed more solid. And right as I got up to it, ready to fly through it, I just had a moment's doubt about how solid it looked. And the funny thing, Alan, I got stuck half in and half out, even though I knew that it was a mental projection. It was a product of my dreaming mind. And so that's what I call the expectation effect, that in a lucid dream, you get what you expect to the degree that you expect it at that moment. Mm-hmm. And realizing when I got stuck half in and half out that this was just an illusory wall, I expected myself to get out of it and did and all. But when you see that expectation effect, you realize how all experience, even, I believe, waking experience, shows this same sort of predilection, the same sort of propensity to reflect back to us our expectations. And there's a lot of psychological studies that show the Pygmalion effect, that you give a teacher 20 students and say, oh, these are our best students that we've ever had, even though you know they're the worst, you tell them they're the best students. And those students blossom with that teacher just because the teacher expects them to do well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you learn here when you see that matter, energy, and consciousness as one. It's hard to separate the experiencer from the experience. They're totally embedded, each in the other.
So this waking reality that we're living in is the same thing, but it's like we could probably fly through the walls if we intended enough or focused enough, but we seem to be confined by matter in the waking world, in the waking reality. Now, we're not in the dream state.
What's the difference? There's a difference. In the lucid dream state, I can manipulate things. I can make things appear and disappear and all. And here in the waking state, that doesn't seem to happen. But you have to think of the work of someone like Carl Jung, who talked about synchronicity, which is basically kind of a causality, that there is fundamentally no cause and effect, that things happened at a certain implicate order that was hard to see, but still you have these synchronicities. Like Carl Jung would be talking to a patient who was telling a dream about a scarab beetle, and all of a sudden Carl Jung looks to his window and knocking on the window is a scarab type beetle. Mm-hmm. You know, how did these two things come together at that moment? A client talking about a scarab beetle and a scarab like beetle knocking on the window. These are moments when we kind of pierce the veil, so to speak, and realize the essential a causality of things, and that matter, energy, and consciousness are likely one.
Right, and I know that example of Carl Jung, and it's great, but I also, not to be skeptical of that, but how many times was there not a scarab on the window when someone was talking about it?
good point. But still, I think you see this, you know, with a number of psychics and a number of just personal experiences and all, where people on occasion, it's like they stumble through the veil, that they get information that's totally non-local. There's no way they could know it. Then later it's verified for them, and they begin to realize that something's up here, that reality isn't this hard, fast, rule-based thing that we normally think it is. that it's quite a bit more mushy and psychologically oriented.
Well, exactly. And I've interviewed the founders of the remote guy, Kyle Putoff, Russell Targ, I know Ingo Swann, I know these people who've showed us the malleability of reality. And I think, yes, our awareness of reality needs to shift, and it is shifting in this age of spiritual awakening. I think another key to lucid dreaming, and I'd love for you to talk about it, is the state of awareness. So, like, we're in this reality. I met you. You looked at me. I looked at you. We agreed that we're in this reality. But in a lucid dream, and it's been my experience, we're in an altered state. I would almost say like a drunken state or a high state. And then can you talk about that altered state of consciousness within the lucid dream experience?
You know, there's some professors, Tracy Cahan from Santa Clara University out in California, and of course, Stephen LaBerge, who's been instrumental in the research of lucid dreaming, they oftentimes talk about lucid dreaming as a type of meta-awareness, an awareness of being aware. And that's one of the beautiful things about lucid dreaming, because when you're aware of being aware, then you have so many more choices and options open to you. You can experiment with that state. You can decide what you want to do or what not to do. And so it's a particularly curious state. It is a state, though, that a person has to learn the rules and the principles of the dreaming universe. And this is something that all lucid dreamers learn. Things like you can't stare fixedly at an object in a lucid dream for more than 4 or 5 seconds because you'll pop out of the lucid dream, you'll wake up. Or you can't get too emotional in a lucid dream, because if your emotions exceed a certain limit point, you'll wake up. And so it's interesting that all around the world, lucid dreamers kind of learn the same basic principles about maintaining conscious awareness in this particular state, this lucid awareness. But it's a deep state of awareness, because again, I feel from this state you can interact with your larger awareness, the inner self, and you can also, to some degree, I believe, touch what Carl Jung talked about, which is the collective unconscious, which is basically a base of information, a base of knowledge, something that Carlos Castaneda's Don Juan called a silent reservoir of knowledge. But you have to be able to create a stable lucid dream and have a plan of action in order to access it. So it's a peculiar state of awareness, and it's one that has elements of I don't know whether to call it objectivity, but it has certain concrete elements that all experienced lucid dreamers come to know.
Well, that actually proves that it's not something, not some aspect of our psychological mind. It sort of proves it to me, the fact that cross-culturally we have a lucid dream reality and rules of lucid dreaming that transcend cultures.
Right, exactly. And that's the beauty of this, because lucid dreaming shows us another layer of awareness. There's an interesting study recently by some neurophysiologists, Ursula Voss in Germany and a couple of other Europeans, and even J. Allen Hobson from Harvard. They did a 19-channel EEG recording of a lucid dreamer who signaled in the dream state that he was lucidly aware. And the way they signal is by moving their eyes. They move their eyes in a certain predetermined pattern, and then the researchers know that they're consciously aware in the dream state. But what this neurophysiological research showed was that the ancient part of the brain, the dreaming part of the brain, was active and alive, just like you would expect in a dream state. But then there were parts of the prefrontal lateral cortex that were also activated simultaneously. And this is something they'd never seen before. Those conscious parts of the brain, parts of them being activated simultaneous with the dreaming parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. And so in their paper, they called lucid dreaming a hybrid state of consciousness with features of both waking and dreaming simultaneously active. So that's why this state of awareness, it's found across lucid dreamers. It's found consistently. We all learn the same sort of rules, and we're all getting to, I believe, a certain dimension of awareness, a certain layer of awareness, and in that layer of awareness, you can investigate and experiment and go much deeper than most people realize.
What was the name of that study? I mean, how can I find that study again?
Here it is, right here on the floor. It's a study by Ursula Voss. It's in Sleep, the journal Sleep, volume 32, number 9, 2009. And the title is Lucid Dreaming, A State of Consciousness with Features of Both Waking and Non-Lucid Dreaming. And their final conclusion here in the abstract, our data show that lucid dreaming constitutes a hybrid state of consciousness with definable and measurable differences from waking and from REM sleep, particularly in frontal areas. But it's a beautiful study, and also recently, I haven't got to read a new study, is a lucid dreamer signaling lucid awareness from within an fMRI. So they're doing a brain scan, and this person is in their lucid dreaming, signals that they're lucidly aware, and basically a brain scan is occurring while he's lucidly aware.
Wow, yeah, I just met one of those scientists who talks about praying and speaking in tongues and measuring brain activity with those areas, so it's just very synchronistic with what I've been researching recently. But on another note, did you love that movie Inception, where you must have seen it, where they go through, so you wake up in your dream, and then you have another, then you dream on different, there were four or five levels of dreaming that were so relevant to what you're saying. I mean, what did you feel about that film?
You know, there are parts of the film Inception that I liked quite a bit, and the basic premise by Christopher Nolan: could a person in a lucid dream, consciously aware in the dream state, interact with another dreamer and insert an idea? That's something that a lot of lucid dreamers have thought about and tried to play around with quite a bit. The parts of the film that I didn't really like is, in all my 30-some years of lucid dreaming, I've never been in a car chase, nor have I ever been in a gun battle.
No, that's just Hollywood. That part is ridiculous. And just to kind of keep the kind of people not interested. But the dreaming aspect, where you go into one level of dream, and then you go to another, and they go to five levels of dreaming reality where time slows down slower and slower. I mean, what did you think about that stuff?
Well, I'll tell you, if you have some experienced lucid dreamers out there who want to play around, they can do what I mentioned in my book that I did. I became consciously aware in the dream state, and then I announced that I wanted to go to the next level or to the next form. And suddenly, in an instant, I was in an out-of-body state in my kitchen of the house that I was sleeping in, and I went flying around the apparent neighborhood. And so you can shift form from a lucid dream, I feel, and I believe other lucid dreamers have reported similar experiences. Christopher Nolan's version is kind of a Hollywood version, and something fun and enjoyable to watch. But for lucid dreamers themselves who are practiced in it, there's different ways of approaching different levels of awareness, and one way is to announce in the lucid dream that you want to go to a next level. The only thing, Alan, you have to be ready for these experiences, because some of them are pretty profound and amazing, and as they say in the classic science fiction work Dune, fear is the mind killer, and so if you go there with fear or whatever, you'll probably pop right out, or you'll have some incredible experience and probably never try this ever again.
Well, it is a preparation. It is a practice, like you say, and I think you're brought to levels and levels as you are aware. But have you met being – I mean, I've had a lucid dream where a friend came to me, actually told me to pull a tooth, and I never did. I didn't at that time. I had a lot of problems until finally I pulled this tooth. But, I mean, I've had lucid dreams, but I haven't – I'm usually alone, and I really don't sense – beings, but have you sensed, I mean, you've met those blue beings, but have you sensed other humans? Have you made contact? Do you say, I want to go visit, you know, your wife or whatever?
Right, right. Here's something very common for lucid dreamers. Oftentimes, we're having a dream and we meet somebody who is deceased. We know the person's deceased, and all of a sudden we become consciously aware because we think, wait a second, this person's been dead for 3 years now. This must be a dream. And so, here's an example, Alan. My father passed away in 97, and 2 years later, I was having a dream. I see this ladder. Here comes this figure down it. I realize it's my dad, and then all of a sudden, I think, wait a second, Dad's been dead for a couple years now. This must be a dream. But then my rational self took over, and I began to think, well, wait a second, is this my dad as a dream symbol or the spiritual essence of my dad who's deceased? And so I thought, I'll ask some questions. So we greet each other, and then I look at Dad, and I go, hey, Dad, you're from the land of the dead. When do you think Mom will pass away? And he looked at me, and he said, well, probably in 2 to 6 years. And so I asked him, of what? And he said something about a heart condition, which kind of surprised me because my mom had never had any heart problems. And I asked him some more questions, and then he told me to be quiet because he came to tell me things. And he told me some important things about our family and also one thing that he wanted me to change in my life. So anyway, when I woke up from that, I realized, well, I'm going to have to wait 2 years to see what happens here. 23 months later, my mom goes to the hospital and almost dies of a heart condition. She had never, ever had heart trouble before ever in her life. And then about 2.5 years after that, she went back to the hospital again with a heart problem caused by a prescription drug that had been implicated in causing heart problems. And once again, she almost died. But I found this very interesting. Could we use lucid dreaming as a scientific tool to investigate non-local information? Could we use lucid dreaming as an experimental tool to investigate the nature of after-death awareness? And I think that these kind of studies could actually be set up with the right sort of conditions and the proper experienced lucid dreamers.
Yeah, I mean, when you say science, I think we have to change our idea of what science is all about, because science really doesn't include consciousness at this moment, but that's shifting, right?
Right.
So you're saying that you did meet, I mean, an aspect, there was a being there, or your father maybe even,
right,
who was able to converse and talk to you and tell you things, why couldn't that be a reality?
Right, and provide information that would later be validated. In my book, I have a whole chapter of interacting with the deceased in lucid dreams, and just some incredible stories of people getting information that they were completely unaware of from deceased loved ones in a lucid dream. The beautiful thing about a lucid dream, you can actually hold a conversation, much like you and I are having one right now. You can converse and have a back and forth. But I did have an inception-like lucid dream, if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I have a lot more to ask, but yeah, please tell me, yeah.
So what happened one night, boy, this must have been about 15 years ago, I was having a lucid dream. I was in this restaurant, and I was consciously aware, and I was just admiring all the detail. And then all of a sudden, through the door comes my good friend, Mo Monroe. And she comes walking in the door, but Alan, she looked kind of funny. Imagine kind of a person who looks kind of drunk, like their head is rolling left and right, and their eyes are kind of rolling around in their head. It's like she couldn't focus in my dream. Like she was in her own dream, she couldn't focus in my dream. So I run up to her, and I go, Mo, this is a dream. This is a lucid dream. We're dreaming this. And she just doesn't respond. And so I think, oh, I'll convince her. And so I grab her around the waist, and I start levitating. And I say, Mo, look, we're floating. This is a lucid dream. Can you see that? And so at that point, she still has that look of her head and eyes kind of moving around like she can't focus in my dream reality. And so I get kind of frustrated. I put my fingers in a big peace sign, and I just shove it in her face. And I go, Mo, do you see this peace sign? You can use it as a symbol to help you become lucidly aware anytime you want. And I woke up. So I thought in the morning, oh, she'll send me an email or she'll give me a call. I live in the Midwest. She lives out in the Bay Area. And nothing. Nothing happened. So I didn't tell her, didn't tell any of my friends. 4 months later, I'm out in the Bay Area on business. I realize I have some free time for lunch. I call up Mo and ask if she'd like to go out to lunch. We agree to meet. I'm standing outside the restaurant, and now this is waking reality. I'm standing outside the restaurant, and here comes Mo walking up the sidewalk, and right when she gets to me, she gets a funny look on her face and shoves a peace sign right in my face. I mean, literally an inch away from my eyes. And I go, Mo, why are you doing that?
Uh-huh.
And she responded, I don't know why. I just felt like it.
So do you think on a subconscious level she got that, but her conscious level wasn't aware of it?
Right, exactly. At the subconscious level, I think somehow she stumbled into my dream, but she couldn't focus within it. She wasn't lucid. But still, I was able to pass on a subconscious idea that 4 months later she acted out in waking reality.
I mean, I actually don't think the word subconscious is really the right word. I would say in this, let's say, astral state, she came into your dream. You had an interaction on these other levels, and you were able to communicate with something that she was not able to take back into conscious awareness. I mean, in a sense, we're always, when we're asleep, we seem to always be in these dream states that seem to involve these other levels of reality. I mean, it's just that you're remembering it, you're becoming aware of it, but I'm sure it's happening all the time to everyone. Would you say that?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that there's various levels, layers of awareness, and some people have the facility to kind of pull out information from those other layers and bring them into this layer, and sometimes it's very helpful, and sometimes not so much. But it does make you wonder, and this is what Carl Jung and others have wondered: where do intuitions come from? Where does inspiration come from? Sometimes it comes so powerfully, but where did it come from? It's like something, some thought, some idea within us that just bubbles to the surface, and we can't really put our finger on it. And that's because I believe that there's various layers of awareness, and intuition is one of those bubbles bursting through our bubble of perception and becoming some realization that we have here.
But where actually does that come? I mean, when you say where does it come, can we ever really know where it comes from?
You really wonder. But in this case, with my friend Mo, I could identify that her action came from a lucid dream that I had 4 months earlier.
And that she, well, also had, but wasn't quite as lucid. I mean, we can't even call it a dream in a sense. It's a another level of reality that the conscious or subconscious or whatever we call our awareness is interacting, right? I mean, she was in that. She had, I mean...
Right. At some other level of awareness, she picked up the information and acted on it 4 months later without, on a conscious level, understanding why.
So it's interesting that she was out of focus or sort of fuzzy or strange in the dream because she was not as lucid as you were. If she was more lucid, she may have been more focused, huh?
Right. You know, Alan, I've talked to some lucid dreamers from the Ukraine and Russia, And some call this the drunken sailor syndrome, that when you see one of your friends in your lucid dream, but they have this kind of look on their face, like their head's rolling left and right and their eyes are moving without any focus on anything. In many cases, they've discovered, like I discovered with Mo, that this seems another dreamer who stumbled into your lucid dream.
Interesting. Well, you know what happens to me in my lucid dreams? It happens a few times. I start to read something. I'm reading, I don't know, some type or something, and I know I'm not sort of projecting something because I'm actually reading, I don't know, like a paragraph that's coming to me. I can't remember what it is that I read, but the some kind of message. I can't. But have you heard about that? People reading lucidly in their dreams?
Right. So there's a couple of points here. Sometimes when you start reading in a lucid dream, and then you look back at the same material a minute later, it's like all the words have changed. And so that's one of the difficult aspects. Then the second difficult aspect is remembering what you've read, because if it gets too long, and then you decide to wake up, you know, you might remember the first 10 words, but you just can't remember a whole paragraph or a whole page or whatever. So that's one of the limitations of lucid dreaming, is this memory faculty. And also the stability of written text.
Well, then let's talk about developing this awareness. I mean, you keep a dream journal. What else? What other practices can one do to become more lucid?
Right. So you can read books like mine, of course, that have a lot of tips and techniques and a lot of conceptual advances that'll help you expand your mind. But things like the way I got started was reading Carlos Castaneda's book, Journey to Ixtlan. And in the book, Don Juan asked him to find his hands in the dream state. And so I just developed my own technique. Before I'd go to sleep, I'd look at my hands while telling myself, suggesting, tonight in my dreams I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. Tonight in my dreams I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. So I used that suggestion for about 5 minutes, and I'd be sleepy and go to sleep. Three nights after doing this consistently, I was walking through a dream in my high school hallway, and suddenly my hands popped right in front of my face like they were spring-loaded, just boom. And I saw my hands, and I thought, oh, my hands, this is a dream. So that's one way, and it's kind of a conditioned response, see your hands and think this is a dream. Then there's other ways of, like, using suggestion, using some of the techniques that Stephen LaBerge have worked on, the mnemonic induction of lucid dreams and things like that. So in my book and elsewhere, you can find techniques. The one thing, though, Alan, you really have to practice consistently. It's like playing the piano, playing the violin, whatever. If you don't practice consistently, you'll never master the subject. You'll just have a few experiences, and that'll be it.
Right, so you really, so I bet you can't wait to get to sleep every night, is that?
I enjoy my dream life, I really do, and my lucid dreams are really just icing on the cake.
Do you take any supplements? People say melatonin increases or certain types of medicinal mushrooms. I don't mean magic mushroom, I mean like just mushrooms. That you, have you done anything like that?
Only some B vitamins to help with memory. Sometimes I'll take that. Sometimes about an hour before I go to sleep, I'll drink some decaffeinated coffee just to have a little bit of caffeine in my system. Sometimes I found that gives me enough of a little boost that I get to the threshold of lucid awareness quicker.
But it doesn't happen to you every night. It's only
when
does it? Why does it happen some nights and not others, would you think?
You know, for most lucid dreamers, if you get them to sit down and talk about it, most of them are having about 2 to 6 lucid dreams a month. At my best, I had 30 lucid dreams a month, but that was when I could devote a lot of time to it back in my college and early 20s. Now, there are a small subset of people who become lucidly aware every night, and a lot of these people had childhood nightmares and learned vigilance. They learned how to differentiate dream reality from waking reality so they'd be protected from the nightmare. And these people now, you know, they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, they have lucid dreams every night. It's quite an interesting thing. In my book, I talk about this. It's called Developing a Lucid Mindset, and I talk how people can do this who didn't have childhood nightmares just by developing certain habits of thought.
Is that something you want, or do you want to, like, just sort of rest sometimes and not have a...
Well, it just depends. It just depends. For a lot of people, though, it is a good introduction, because developing a lucid mindset is like examining waking reality numerous times throughout the day, or your state of awareness. Here's how one woman told me she developed it. She had a neurotic habit. She would ask herself 20 times a day, what was I just doing? And what was I just doing? What was I just doing? And so in the dream state, she would ask herself, what was I just doing? And then she'd remember, oh, I was putting on my pajamas to go to bed. This must be a dream. This must be a lucid dream. So if you develop a lucid mindset by examining your awareness, by examining your environment, you can begin to have lucid dreams every night.
You know, I also had lucid dreams when I felt like I was sort of stuck. I couldn't move. I was, like, not dreaming, not awake. I was in this state where I could not move my body. I felt like I was half in and out of my body. And I'd have to, and sort of, it's a little panic state. And then I'd have to do something with my mind, sort of like make a somersault of consciousness. And boom, I was suddenly back in. Is that, have you heard about that before?
Yeah, you know, Alan, I'm glad you brought that up. That's something we call sleep paralysis. And basically what we think is happening is you've woken from a dream, your mind is awake, but your body is still functionally paralyzed like it is in the dream state. And so for some people, they find this really frightening and get all freaked out and all. But there's a gentleman who's written a great book on this, Ryan Hurd, H-U-R-D, wrote a book on sleep paralysis, and he had a lot of experience with it and learned, much like you did, how to move from sleep paralysis directly into a lucid dream. And so if there's people out there who suffer from this, I'd really highly recommend this book.
But I don't actually agree with what you're saying, I mean, with what the officials say, that your body's still sleeping, your mind is awake. It seems to me, and I don't have any way of proving it, that I'm not actually in my body. It's like I've astral projected out, and I've not actually come back in totally, so my
That's the alternate explanation is people have returned from out of body experience and they're half in and half out, and that's why they have that strange experience.
I mean, there's no way to prove that, but it's associated with a altered state of consciousness. It's like I am aware of other levels of reality in a way, just like in lucid dreams, like we've said. It's like this level of consciousness, I'm thinking in a certain way and certain things are relevant. In the lucid state, this is what takes practice, I think, to be aware of the other levels of cognition, of cognizant, of sentience. And then in these half in and half out or these sleep paralysis, there's another level also. It's very subtle.
I agree. And I think that's why I really like that quote by Louis Pasteur, that chance favors the prepared mind. Because if you mentally know how to respond in these cases, you can go from having a strange experience or a frightening experience and have a really incredible lucid dream or out-of-body experience.
Right. So we should start to wrap up a little bit. I mean, it's been fascinating because you are so, you're so well-versed in this literature. I think I mentioned to you there's the International Academy of Consciousness who teaches out-of-body practices. Are you aware of those?
Right, yeah, I'm aware of them, yeah.
And they talk about landscapes and animals and things and planets that they visit, and they seem to be really they seem to really have named a lot of these other internal environments or external environments. Are you aware of any of this stuff they've talked about?
Well, you know, Robert Monroe, of course, had his various locales and areas and all. You know, lucid dreaming, I like to think of it like the author Jane Roberts did, as a projection of consciousness. And so she thought of out of bodies as another type of projection of consciousness. So lucid dreams are kind of a subset of projections of consciousness. And the beautiful thing about lucid dreaming, though, is it's more connected to this physical reality. So in a lucid dream state, you can heal yourself emotionally, I feel, and overcome emotional issues, shadow issues. And in my book, I have a chapter of people who have apparently healed their physical body while lucidly aware in a lucid dream. And so when you start talking about out of bodies and astral projection, you're talking about another layer beyond, which is actually kind of less connected to your physical body. So the beautiful thing about lucid dreaming is it connects to this here and now much more closely and offers much more transformative potential on many levels.
So, and overall, I mean, you've had some great experiences, great adventures in consciousness, but how has it totally changed what happens in this waking life for you?
You know, it's made me become more aware of my own thinking process, my beliefs, my expectations, my intent, and also more conscious of this subconscious internal chatter. I realize now that I exist in an interconnected oneness, that on deeper levels there's telepathic information that's accessible if you can get your mind in the right state, and that basically matter, energy, and consciousness are one. And so by developing one's consciousness, one just has much greater access to the nature of reality.
But beyond that, do you have the sense that you are a forever being, that your consciousness will always be what it is, beyond the body, beyond death? You know, is that a reality to your awareness?
You know, most lucid dreamers, after they get into it for 10 or 15 years, they finally start to realize that if an after-death state exists, and if it's anything like lucid dreaming, it's going to be a blast. I mean, it's going to be incredible, because in lucid dreaming, you see the opportunity for growth, fulfillment, for joy and exploration. So yes, I feel that lucid dreaming gives all of us insight into awareness without physical form, and of course, just by the nature of things, that's where we're all headed, one way or the other.
Have you gotten into any Australian Aborigine understanding about dream time and where they go?
You know, oftentimes when you read their experiences, it sounds like they have developed their telepathy to a fantastic level, and I think because they realize they exist in an interconnected oneness, and also that they realize that matter is not just inert energy, that it's conscious and alive, and that also space is conscious and alive. And they have learned on an intuitive level how to reach out to it and interact with it. And so I very much admire many of the practitioners of Dreamtime, because on a certain level, they're living that awareness that matter and energy and consciousness are one.
No, it's true, and they have thousands of years of history and dream time where they relate that, and they say, you know, they're just in the physical bodies to be caretakers of the earth, but they really exist in the dream time, which I think is almost what you're saying. You're not quite saying that, but I think that ultimately we only really exist in the dream time, and the physicality is just a small part of who we really are in totality.
Well, that the physicality is a specific type of dreaming that we're dreaming now, but it's different than our dream state. So the various types of dreaming but from the Aboriginal perspective, the current space is part of the dream time.
The other thing I want to mention is not quite about lucid dream, but when I've been very tired and I've dreamed or I've found myself falling asleep, even for like 5 minutes, I come back rejuvenated because of somehow the imagery or the abstraction in the mind or whatever happens in these dream states. Somehow regenerates me or gives me energy. Is that unusual to notice?
No, I think a number of people have realized that just giving your ego waking mind a little bit of a break so it can dip back down into deeper levels of awareness, even just for 5 minutes, just taking a 5-minute nap, is very refreshing and kind of reconnects us with our inner energy. Every night we spend about 23% of the night in the dream state. And from an evolutionary perspective, I don't think we'd be involved in 2 hours of dreaming if it wasn't somehow connected with our own personal energy, with basically the energy of consciousness and creativity.
Right. I agree. I mean, on another level, on a spiritual level, mystics say, or I've read somewhere that we need to return to our source every night or every, you know, 24 hours in order to bring back that life force here into this plane, this dream state, this waking state here, because it's like that world feeds this world, and without that return to those places, we wouldn't have any energy to live here. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I believe, I'd have to go back and read these studies, but I believe they've done studies where they've taken poor little mice, they've allowed them to sleep, but they've stopped them from dreaming. And within a week or so, even though the mice are very healthy, they're plump and all, they just die. They just spontaneously die. So there's something about dreaming that maybe we're being too anthropomorphic here, but I do think it connects us to a source of energy, a source of psychic energy, or however you want to put it. But it does seem essential for a well-functioning human condition.
There does get into the subject. Dogs obviously dream, and cats, and mice, I suppose. But what's happening to their dream? What's going on in those dream states? Are they lucid or?
Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, Alan. I do have 2 Abyssinian cats, and they have come to me in the dream state and told me what they wanted. And it's been so funny. One of them never liked to be held, and then one night in a dream, it came and showed me how it wanted to be held, and showed me the posture. And in the morning when I woke up and put the cat in that posture, it would allow me to hold it. And my wife totally freaked out and asked me, how did you get the cat to allow you to hold it? And I said, it came in a dream and told me. So I just feel there's a lot of people who, horse whisperers and people who talk to animals and stuff. And I think, again, we live in an interconnected oneness. And at a certain level of awareness, some people have the capacity to tap into animal consciousness as well.
Well, thank you, Robert. This has been a great conversation, and I'm sure you're continuing your lucid dreaming studies, aren't you?
Yeah, I keep going deeper. Every time I think I've hit the final plateau, I find a new mountain to climb. So it's been a lot of fun.
So are you writing another book? I mean, where's the new research taking you?
You know, I hope to write another book, and my first book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, is just to make people realize that there's a deeper layer of awareness that they can contact an inner self. My second book, I think, will be more about the spiritual use of lucid dreaming to go deeper and explore spiritual ideas in the lucid dream state.
So this current book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, it's a Red Whale Wiser production?
Right. That's right. That's right.
And do you have a website that you...
Yeah, I have two websites. My book website is lucidadvice.com, and my free magazine is lucidreammagazine.com.
And it's a magazine that's devoted to dreaming practices?
Right. It's entirely devoted to lucid dreaming. My co-editor, Lucy Gillis, and I have been producing it for basically 12 years now.
And it's open to contributors?
And... Yeah, we hope people write articles or submit interesting lucid dreams and keep it going.
Mm, I did meet Montague Elman once. Do you know his work?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, and there's a woman, Judy, in New York, who's continuing
right.
some of his work, Judy Gardner. And
That's right.
Yes, so, no, it's a subject that, it's so much a part of us and needs to be, have more attention paid to it, because I think there's definitely answers there for our human condition in these
exactly.
other realms.
And that's why I wrote this book, Alan. I wanted people to see the deeper layers of lucid dreaming, because a lot of people have 100 lucid dreams, think they have it all figured out. It's just expectation and mental model. And if they read my book, they'll conceptually understand how much deeper you can take lucid dreaming.
With that, I just want to ask you one more question. Do you feel we are evolving now? Is there an acceleration of awareness, consciousness that's seems to be happening this year or this time that you noticed, or is it all the same as it ever was?
No, I think things are speeding up. The Buddhists often say realization is liberation, and as we realize things more accurately and more truly, I think we start to liberate larger aspects of our mind and really evolve consciously.
So that's happening at this time, you feel?
I believe so.
I believe so too, and maybe we'll have another discussion about that. Thank you, Robert, for being a guest.
Oh, thanks, Alan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been talking to Robert Wagoner. That's Wagoner. His book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. Great discussion, great points he brings out in this book. And are you still there, Robert?
Yeah.
Oh, dream journals, you recommend that for sure, right? Wake up every morning, write down what you dreamed.
Yeah. If you can't remember your dreams, you're not going to be very good at lucid dreaming. So keep a dream journal.
All right. Great. Thanks again. And this program, I'll let you know where it's posted. It'll be posted on bbsradio.com, but I'll also send you a link to it when I post it on my website, newrealities.com.
Okay? Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. And this is New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. And each week, this is the kind of conversation I love to have, because it's an exploration into the unknown parts of ourselves that seem to be laying right in front of us, and we just have to go through the doorways into the unknown, and new realities appear. And that's why I call this program New Realities. Thanks for listening. You can hear me next week on BBS Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. West Coast Time. That's Station 2 on bbsradio.com. Thanks for listening. You can check my website, newrealities.com, and you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I welcome your comments. Thanks, and look forward to connecting with all of you next week. Good night.